This morning, America's First News starts right after this. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Letting loose on Memorial Day. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Tuesday, May 26th. Thanks for being with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
Americans used the holiday weekend to soak up the outdoors as more states lifted restrictions, but that came with controversy amid COVID-19 concerns.
An executive director of the World Health Organization warns of a second peak in areas where coronavirus infections are declining.
Colleges are facing a tricky balance tied to the pandemic. Hear how universities will be transformed in the fall.
And it's one thing to be quarantined at home, but how about if you were quarantined at work?
You know, many of us may be working from home or are frontline essential workers, but these people are actually living at their workplace. They're getting cots, they're getting RVs. You know, they're basically having to say, hey, you have to live here for 2 weeks, for 4 weeks, and you can't go home and see your family.
Austin Hufford at the Wall Street Journal and having to live where you work during coronavirus restrictions. Americans paid a low-key tribute to those who died serving in the U.S. Armed Forces, with many Memorial Day events canceled or dialed back because of the coronavirus. On a related note, Reuters says maybe half those gathered at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial in Washington wore face coverings, recommended as one way to fight infection. Only about 1 in 10 did so on the boardwalk by the beach in Ocean City, New Jersey.
Just use common sense. Common sense. Everybody knows common sense. You have social distancing. Use your, wear your mask.
William Barlow was at West Beach on Lake Michigan in Indiana.
As long as you take proper precaution, stay 6 feet away, as long as you're taking all the proper precaution for safety, I feel like you'll be okay.
Missouri officials, meanwhile, yesterday slammed what they called the irresponsible and dangerous behavior of people who crowded pools and patios at the Lake of the Ozarks over Memorial Day weekend. The Kansas City Health Director now wants revelers there to self-quarantine for 14 days. Footage of a resort in the area showed dozens of people in the pool without masks. President Trump made Memorial Day visits to a military ceremony and a historic fort, not only commemorating our nation's war dead, but also in part paying tribute to service members responding to the coronavirus. A few hundred people gathered yesterday outside Fort McHenry in Baltimore, which was decorated with red, white, and blue banners. During the War of 1812, American soldiers at Fort McHenry defended Baltimore from attack by the British. The raising of a large American flag at the fort is said to have inspired the poem that turned into the national anthem.
They gave their lives to so boldly and brilliantly defend, and we pledge in their cherished memories that this majestic flag will proudly fly forever.
Earlier, as a military bugler played taps, Mr. Trump followed tradition by placing a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier in Arlington National Cemetery. Meanwhile, presidential candidate Joe Biden made his first appearance in more than 2 months by placing a wreath at a veterans park near his home in Delaware. The World Health Organization has issued a warning saying that countries where coronavirus infections are declining could still face an immediate second peak if they dial back government restrictions too soon. We get more from this morning's Mike Gavin.
An executive director of the organization told an online briefing that the world is still in the middle of the first wave. Dr. Mike Ryan, chief of health emergencies, says that while cases are declining in many countries, they are still increasing in Central and South America, South Asia, and Africa. He explained that epidemics often come in waves, which means that outbreaks could come back in places where the first wave has subsided. There was also a chance that infection rates could rise again more quickly if measures to halt the first wave were lifted too soon. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. Meanwhile, President Trump says he has just finished taking a 2-week course of the anti-malarial drug hydroxychloroquine, which he's promoted as a preventive or curative treatment for the coronavirus. And he told Sinclair Broadcasting yesterday, "I'm still here." It's 11 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. It's the question on everyone's mind. When are we going to have a vaccine? And as part of that, how can small investors get involved? Right now, investors have a unique opportunity to not only invest early in cutting-edge coronavirus vaccine innovation, but also to help move the world forward by investing in MIGVAX with our crowd. MIGVAX says it's uniquely poised to develop a COVID-19 vaccine based on previous successful experience with avian vaccines. They're now moving towards clinical trials. Our crowd is investing in the important vaccine work MIGVAX is doing and has made it so accredited investors can also invest. The crowdsourced investing platform at Our Crowd helps you invest in promising companies before they go public, companies like Beyond Meat and over 200 others. Learn more at ourcrowd.com/deal. That's OURCROWD, ourcrowd.com. Setting up your account is free. Get started right now at ourcrowd.com/deal. Thanks for spending time with us. It's safe to say college will be a very different experience for students this fall than what they imagined. But right now, that's pretty much all they can be sure of. Jillian Berman, reporter at MarketWatch, says with the fall semester looming, plans by college officials are varying widely. Jillian, what are we learning at this point?
So colleges are really sort of, you know, they're staggering their announcements. They're making different announcements. You know, some schools haven't said anything. Some schools have said we're going to be back on the fall, and we're going to be back on campus in the fall in some way. Very few schools have said they're going to go online only. They're hesitant to, you know, to make that pronouncement at this point, I think.
Yeah. All right. So specifically, the California State University system has said online only, right? At least for the fall semester or the full year.
Yeah, it looks like for now, at least the fall semester, they're kind of the only major school system, to say so far that they're going to be online. Notre Dame and actually yesterday, the University of Texas are talking about, you know, coming back for kind of like a shortened semester. So everybody's on campus for one, you know, sort of robust period, and then they go back at Thanksgiving. And then, you know, places like NYU and Boston College have said that they plan to reopen their campuses in the fall, but that's subject to, you know, government health directives, which, you know, are in flux, as we know.
Yeah. So the schools that are going to send kids home at Thanksgiving, that's going to then begin a winter break and they'll return in the spring? Any idea what they mean by that?
Yeah, that's, you know, I didn't get a ton of clarity on that, but yes, that's kind of the plan. And, you know, the idea, I was talking with a doctor who's advising colleges on this, and she said, you know, she hasn't spoken directly to schools about who have plans to do this, but sort of the idea is to minimize, you know, people are coming from all over the country and all over the world, and it minimizes travel, you know, to just get everybody on campus at one time, you know, sort of minimize risk of the virus spreading from people coming in and out.
Yeah, we're speaking with Jillian Berman, personal finance reporter at MarketWatch. Her piece is called Colleges Balance Student Safety with Falling Revenues. Here's how universities will be transformed in the fall. How about Texas Tech? I know they're trying to be specific now.
Yeah, so I spoke with the president of Texas Tech, and, you know, he's being, you know, thoughtful and really kind of sorting through the details. Right now, they still don't know exactly what their fall semester is going to look like, though they are planning on bringing students back to campus in some way. And they're just kind of waiting to hear from academic units about how they want to deliver their courses. And kind of based on that, they can assess, okay, the capacity of the building, you know, how many classes are going to be using it at once, things like that. And so, yeah, they're sort of working through those plans right now.
If say, you know, late August, early September were the general start time for these fall semesters, at what point do students need to know a specific date or need to know exactly if they're going to be online or in person or a hybrid? I mean, they have to make some sort of plans.
Yeah. So, you know, students in the past, students have typically had to deposit on by May 1st. A lot of colleges extended that this year to June 1st. But, you know, I think for peace of mind, students sort of, they want to know as soon as possible, but colleges, I think, are delaying announcing their plans because, you know, one consultant I spoke to yesterday, who's also the former president of Vassar College, said, you know, if you if a college announces that they're going online, they could lose students to other schools that haven't said anything or that are saying that they're going to be in person. So, you know, I think that students and parents are anxious. They want to know as soon as possible, but, you know, colleges are hesitant to give that answer.
How much is revenue driving some of these decisions?
Yeah, so I think, you know, that's obviously one of the concerns with going online only is you're going to lose, you know, students may say I'm going to sit out this semester, or even if they do decide to, you know, to enroll, colleges make a lot of money from fees and, you know, sort of businesses associated with being on campus.
Thanks, Jillian. Jillian Berman, reporter at MarketWatch. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
The World Health Organization's Emergencies Director, Dr. Mike Ryan, says countries with declining coronavirus cases still face danger or an immediate second peak if they ease restrictions too soon.
We may get a second peak in this wave. This happened during pandemics in the past. It certainly happened in the pandemic of 1919 and the Spanish flu.
Ryan says countries in Europe and North America should continue to put in place the public health measures, surveillance measures, testing measures, and a comprehensive strategy to ensure that we continue on a downward path.
Number two.
Despite warnings from authorities, big crowds turned out over the Memorial Day weekend disregarding distancing rules. In Missouri, people packed bars and restaurants at the Lake of the Ozarks, a vacation spot popular with Chicagoans. Hundreds of people gathered at a popular Florida beach boardwalk and were seen partying and dancing despite distancing restrictions imposed by the state.
Number three.
President Trump mourned the country's fallen service members, marking the Memorial Day holiday at Baltimore's historic Fort McHenry. Trump noted that tens of thousands of service members and National Guard personnel are currently on the front lines.
In recent months, our nation and the world have been engaged in a new form of battle against an invisible enemy.
Meanwhile, Joe Biden ventured out of his home in Wilmington, Delaware to observe Memorial Day. Accompanied by his wife, Biden laid a flower wreath at Wilmington Memorial Park. A lawyer for the family of a Connecticut murder suspect is pleading for his surrender as police involved in a multi-state search for the 23-year-old college student circulated a photo of a person matching his description walking along railroad tracks in Pennsylvania. Peter Manfredonia, a University of Connecticut senior, is suspected of killing a 62-year-old man and a 23-year-old woman. He is believed to be armed with several guns stolen during a home invasion. With more people than ever staying home, their sedans, pickup trucks, and SUVs are parked unattended on the streets, making them easy targets for opportunistic thieves. And despite silent streets and nearly non-existent traffic, vehicle larceny shot up 63% in New York and nearly 17% in Los Angeles between January 1st and mid-May compared with the same period last year. And many other law enforcement agencies around the U.S. are reporting an increase in stolen cars, even as violent crime has dropped dramatically nationwide.
Jeez. Okay.
Watch your car.
Might be time to move it. You know, maybe it's just when it sits there for a long, long time, thieves who are spying it notice these things. Oh, geez. Thanks, Jen.
Dell Technologies has special business savings right now to help you office everywhere and stay productive. Save up to 45% on desktops, laptops, and do-it-all servers with Intel Core processors. Upgrade to new modern devices with Windows 10 and save on essential electronics. All with free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL for a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit dell.com/smallbusinessdeals.
Thanks for spending time with us. More than 2 months into coronavirus lockdowns, video conferencing has taken hold in most workplaces, and that could endure if companies allow employees to work from home forever. For many people, that means figuring out what to do about the 10 pounds that webcams tend to add under your chin. It's a story by Patience Hagen, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Patience, what have you found?
I found it's not just me. I found out almost everyone sees that double chin. You know, if you look down at a camera like we so often do when we're talking on video calls, all of the fat just comes out of hiding.
And that's, as somebody in your story said, that's pretty much for everybody, like even a child.
Absolutely.
All right. So the different techniques that you can use to try to hide the double chin on camera are what?
Okay. One of the classics is simply elevating the camera. You want the camera like eye level or above. If it's looking down on you, that chin is going to just disappear, and you might just look slimmer in general. Other interesting techniques are using tape on the back of your neck to kind of pull the skin back. Other people grow a beard. For some people, that works. For some people, it doesn't. If you see it mid-call and it's too late to do any of those things, put your fist in front of your chin and just look like you're thinking really hard. That can hide it.
So I was going to ask you about the tape because that was at the tail end of your story. How does the tape trick actually work? Where does the tape go? You got to use clear tape, I guess?
You can do it even with non-clear tape because if you put it in the back, as some people do. Some people stretch the skin back and put it back there. There's even tape that's designed specifically for the purpose. One brand is called Nexi, and they make tape that's designed to not be too damaging and stretching out to your skin.
Wow, that's something. I was surprised, well, maybe not surprised, but this doctor in New York who is suddenly, his phone is ringing off the hook because people want to explore getting rid of their double chins.
Exactly, absolutely. I've heard this from several plastic surgeons all around the country that they're getting a lot more inquiries about double chin specifically, and more generally about various imperfections around the face and neck. You know, now that people are at home, they're actually on camera all day, staring at their face all day, and they're seeing all these unflattering things. It's really making more people think about plastic surgery.
Jeez. We're speaking with Patience Hagen, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Her piece is called Next in Video Conferencing, Hiding Your On-Screen Double Chin. Are more people finding out or at least admitting that they're more vain than they thought?
Yes, absolutely. That's what I'm learning from reporting this story. Everyone's like, I thought it was just me. And everyone's saying like, wow, I didn't think something like this would bother me that much.
Thanks, Patience. Patience Hagen, reporter at The Wall Street Journal. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Even in tough times, you want to try to look your best, even if it's just from the waist up for those video chats. So when it comes to your facial hair, Harry's has you covered, bringing you incredibly high-quality blades at factory direct prices, just $2 per blade. Now, when it comes to my facial hair, I'm typically a goatee guy, but lately I've been using these times of home quarantine to experiment with a full beard. This has allowed the precision trimmer blade on my Harry's razor to take center stage. I use it to make sure my new beard is looking its best. Now, you can keep your face looking smooth, too, or your beard looking clean, with a Harry's trial set delivered right to your doorstep. Just go to harrys.com/Gordon to order yours. And get this, to help support those who need it the most right now, Harry's is donating $1 million worth of shaving supplies to hospitals across the U.S. so you can feel good about looking good. Listeners of our show can redeem their Harry's trial set at harrys.com/Gordon. You'll get a weighted ergonomic handle for a firm grip, a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel with aloe to keep your skin hydrated, and a travel blade cover to keep your razor dry and easy to grab on the go. Go to harrys.com/Gordon to start shaving better today.
Taking the day's information and helping you make sense of it all. We're here for you every morning. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Hey, thanks for being with us, and welcome into Tuesday, May 26. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. Oil is on track for its best month ever in terms of percentage growth, although prices are still half what they were in January. A travel ban from Brazil takes effect today. That country's been hit hard by the coronavirus. New York Stock Exchange reopens its iconic trading floor today. Joe Biden apologizing for comments to a radio program in which he said, quote, if you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, then you ain't black. And the unusual place where a stimulus check was lost then found. That story in about 20 minutes. While much of America has stayed home for 2 months, workers from bus drivers to grocery store stockers and some manufacturing employees have continued reporting to their workplaces. That has exposed some to heightened risk of infection and prompted employers to add procedures and protective gear to minimize the risk of local outbreaks. Among the more extreme strategies that employers have tried is sequestering staffers at work. More from Austin Hufford, manufacturing reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Austin, can't imagine what that's like.
Yeah, so we found a few examples of
a few companies and organizations who, you know, many of us may be working from home or are frontline essential workers, but these people are actually living at their workplace. They're getting cots, they're getting RVs. You know, they're basically having to say, hey, you have to live here for 2 weeks, for 4 weeks, and you can't go home and see your family.
Goodness. So who are some of these workers? What line of work are they in?
So far, I found people who are really critical to operate. So utility companies is a good example. You know, if our electricity goes out, if our water systems go out, that would obviously be very, very bad. And so these companies are putting an extra effort to make sure that their systems stay up and that their workers don't get sick. So one example is a company called National Grid. They're basically in the Northeast. They provide natural gas and electricity to New York and Massachusetts and, you know, other states in the Northeast. Right. And basically they had workers sequestered across 8 sites. So basically within a week they had to decide, are we doing this? They said yes, and then 10 days later, workers started moving in.
Man. So explain some of those logistics that these companies have to go through, like finding food for these folks or the showers, beds.
Yeah, that was one of my first questions. I was like, wait, so how are these people being fed? How does that work? And they said they actually hired like a food services provider, and those employees actually had to stay on site also. So it wasn't just their own workers, but they actually had the food people come in and stay and cook meals 3 days, 3 times a day.
No kidding. So, I mean, are they just converting conference rooms into like hostels, kind of, where people sleep 6 to a room? Or are there enough offices where you can jam a cot in? How does that work?
Yeah, so well, first they brought in about 2 dozen trailers, like RV style trailers, to have people sleep in. And the way that it works is these people, that they work 12 hours a day, 12 hours on, 12 hours off,
okay,
and no days off. And basically, each one of these trailers is basically 2 to a trailer. So you have one person on the day shift and one person on the night shift. And they basically would just split the trailer that way.
That's something.
And so in addition to the trailers, they also had some conference rooms that they converted. At this one site in Massachusetts, they had about 80 people there at any one time. They kind of had, you know, 2 different waves, 80 people for 3 weeks and 80 people for 3 weeks or around that time frame.
We're speaking with Austin Hufford, manufacturing reporter at The Wall Street Journal. His piece is called "To Avoid Coronavirus Risks, These People Live Where They Work." And he's profiled a handful of companies that are sequestering their workers, not allowing them to go home. I guess you have to ask employees who want to do this, right? Or can you just order somebody to stay on site?
Yeah, I mean, so far, everyone says that they asked for volunteers, and that, you know, basically everyone raised their hand. I mean, you know, they're obviously getting extra pay and all that stuff. And I don't have too many details on the pay end.
Okay.
But definitely, I mean, that's something where, you know, this is obviously a hard decision for a lot of people. But at the same time, though, they also view this, you know, this is a way to keep themselves safe too, and their families safe, you know, while still getting a paycheck to pay for things. And
yeah.
So, you know, I think at the end of the day, they viewed this as, you know, doing what was right for society as a whole, perhaps.
How about the mental toll, though, some of these folks must face?
Yeah, they said it was pretty difficult, you know. I mean, you know, for some people, they were there for 5-6 weeks at a time. And then at least at these sites, because they were working every single day, they didn't even have any alcohol to bring in, you know, so they couldn't even get a beer to blow off steam.
Right.
You know, I guess when they brought in the second wave of employees, those employees had a little bit more time to prepare. And so they were able to bring in some golf clubs, some, you know, basketball hoops, that sort of thing.
Thanks, Austin. Austin Hufford, manufacturing reporter at the Wall Street Journal. That is something, be locked at work for 2 weeks. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Tuesday. It's time now for the mic drop with This Morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, you know, most of us have had the experience of pulling out of our driveway or pulling out of a parking lot and realizing we left a door or the trunk open. We'd all like to think that we'd notice if we were rolling down the highway with a dump truck bed 30 feet up in the air, but that wasn't the case for one Wisconsin driver. A traveler captured the moment on video when the dump truck bed slammed into an overpass near Milwaukee International Airport after being left in the up position. The onlooker said he tried to pull ahead of the truck driver and flag him down, but wasn't able to get his attention before the truck eventually hit the bridge. The truck bed, of course, didn't clear the bridge. It stayed in place, and it made a very loud thud while the cab of the truck continued on about 50 feet. Thankfully, nobody, including the driver, was hurt. This is some crazy video to see.
I can imagine. I've seen that type of thing before.
Yeah.
But that the impact of that is just stunning.
You hear about it in traffic reports all the time, like a truck hit an overpass kind of thing, but you never see it at full. I don't know if it happens at full speed like that. I mean, you know, this was going at least 60 miles an hour, this truck, it seemed like.
There's a train overpass by my high school in Metuchen, New Jersey. And on occasion, about once a year, that one truck wouldn't fit.
Right.
And you could hear like the slam and the screech as the metal grinded on that metal trestle. Yeah. It was an unmistakable noise. And those trucks, they would just peel back like a like an old can of tuna or something like that. They just rolled back.
Yeah,
the tops.
Not the same heft as a dump truck bed. And you would think, I mean, I've never driven a dump truck before, but you would think, don't they have some sort of a warning light or something that says that the bed is in the up position like we do in our cars? Yeah, something. Some kind of flashing light of some kind that says, hey, the bed's still up when you start to drive away.
By the way, tip of the cap.
Yeah.
If there's no damage to that overhead structure.
It didn't look like it sustained a lot of damage. Right? Yeah, it was pretty well intact.
It's impressive.
So, congratulations on that. And it's not just regular people, Gordon, who are in danger of seeing the scale tip upward while spending more time at home. Pro athletes also have to be careful not to pack on extra pounds and fall out of shape. And here's one extreme way to do that. Taylor Rapp, who plays safety for the LA Rams, tweeted over the weekend that he completed the 10K calorie challenge in which you burn 10,000 calories in one day. Rapp included screenshots in his posts with proof of the distances he traveled and calories he burned. According to the posts, he started at 4:30 a.m. He biked 125 miles, swam 1.25 miles, hiked for 4 miles, ran for 3, and completed an additional workout, all while traversing through 7,300 feet of elevation. And he finished up just after 9 p.m.
Man. Wow, 10,000 calories.
I mean, I would have stopped for at least 5 snacks on that route, too. I don't know if he went up eating at all. I hope he did.
It almost sounds along the lines of a triathlon.
Yes.
Certainly the biking 125 miles, that is one leg of a triathlon.
Yeah.
The swimming 1.25, that's probably a little shy of what a traditional triathlon is.
And they didn't run the full length, because normally they run like a whole marathon.
They run a full marathon. So he hiked for 4, ran for 3. Additional workout plus elevation. Well, I wonder how accurate that is, because if he's in elevation, I would imagine that's added calories.
Yes. But. Yeah. I think that helps. The going up and down certainly helps burn the calories.
Well,
but
something.
It is kind of like a triathlon, but it's not like most people just wake up one day and you're like, I'm just going to go do a triathlon today.
Well, most of us aren't professional athletes either.
Right.
Thanks, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News.
Dell Technologies has special business savings right now to help you office everywhere and stay productive. Save up to 45% on desktops, laptops, and do-it-all servers with Intel Core processors. Upgrade to new modern devices with Windows 10 and save on essential electronics. All with free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL for a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit Dell.com/small-business-deals.
Helping you navigate the COVID-19 crisis with the facts and information to make smart decisions. This is America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Hey, glad you're with us. The rising demand for grocery delivery during coronavirus has revived a largely forgotten occupation, the milkman. The Wall Street Journal says the largely gone business model of milkmen making door-to-door dairy deliveries has made a comeback as the pandemic and shelter-in-place orders have forced people to stay indoors and rely on grocery drop-offs. However, the old-slash-new business is getting a modern update to its services. Family-owned Wade's Dairy in Bridgeport, Connecticut, which canceled its milk delivery service in 1992 due to lack of consumer interest, has started up again, but with options for milk, eggs, cheese, and yogurt doorstep delivery for a $10 flat fee. The reopening has been a huge success. Doug Wade Jr., president of Wade's Dairy, says more than 250 people in 25 towns have signed up for the service. He said the new venture is pulling in $10,000 in sales per week. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Europeans and Americans soaked up the sun where they could over the weekend, taking advantage of the first holiday weekend since coronavirus restrictions were eased. Several hundred people appeared at a rally in Point Pleasant Beach, New Jersey, calling on Governor Phil Murphy to reopen more businesses. He says he understands the frustration.
Listen, I want to get them opened again as much as the next guy, but We're not there yet. I want to do it responsibly, and I don't want to kill anybody.
The U.S. is on track to surpass 100,000 coronavirus deaths in the next few days. Europe has seen over 169,000 dead.
Number two.
The World Health Organization says it will temporarily drop hydroxychloroquine, the malaria drug President Trump said he was taking, from its global study of experimental COVID-19 treatments, saying its experts need to review all available evidence to date. Now, the WHO says, in light of a paper published last week that showed people taking hydroxychloroquine were at higher risk of death and heart problems than those that were not, there would be a temporary pause on its global clinical trial.
Number three.
President Trump's demanding that North Carolina's Democratic governor sign off immediately on allowing the Republican National Convention to move forward in August with full attendance, or he'll be forced to find another site. Trump's tweets about the convention planned for Charlotte come 2 days after North Carolina recorded its largest daily increase in positive cases yet. A lawyer for the family of Ahmaud Arbery says a federal prosecutor told the slain man's mother that federal officials are investigating potential misconduct by local officials who handled the case. Lawyer Lee Merritt says U.S. Attorney Bobby Christine, whose jurisdiction includes southern Georgia, met with him and Arbery's mother last week. It was a made-for-TV event, and TV viewers made it a winner. Turner Sports says Sunday's charity match, featuring two pro golfers and two NFL quarterbacks, was a ratings hit. The match, Champions for Charity, drew an average audience of 5.8 million viewers, making it the most watched golf telecast in cable TV history. The match pitted Tiger Woods and Peyton Manning against Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady, with the Woods-Manning team winning. The match raised $20 million for COVID-19 relief.
$20 million? Holy cow.
Few people watched.
Man, thanks, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. An employee at a North Carolina car wash found a $1,200 IRS stimulus check in the trash at work and was able to track down its rightful recipient with the help of his daughter. Antonio Hernandez found the COVID-19 stimulus check bearing the name Charles Thompson in the trash while working at the Evans Street Car Wash in Greenville, North Carolina. Mr. Hernandez enlisted the help of his daughter to find the check's rightful owner. The address listed on the mailed check turned out to be an old address, but they were able to find contact info for the Mr. Thompson. He said the check finding its way back to him was a miracle. He told WITN television, from my old apartment to the trash can to great people like these two finding it. Mr. Thompson said the check will allow him to catch up on rent and get by while construction work remains inconsistent for him. You see, I had no idea the check would have been in the car wash trash can. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Great news! There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.